welcome everyone, both in remote participation and here in physical participation in the room, to this session on ICANN and ICANN's corporate responsibility to respect human rights. I am Niels ten Hoever with Article 19, and together with Lee Hibbert of the Council of Europe, we will be moderating this session. We'd like to be this a very interactive session, so always feel free to drop in. The context of this session is that human rights have been brought up at several ICANN meetings. And here we would like to make this subject more tangible and make it more clear so that we really all know what we are talking about and try to tie this down in a constructive discussion and hopefully also in a cross-community effort to take this further. I'd like to point out shortly that in Article 4 of ICANN's Articles of Incorporation, it's stated that ICANN is there to respect international law. That could be an interesting tangent for the discussion, as well as the reports that we've all produced and of which there are physical copies at the door. With this, I'd like to hand it over to Lee.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much to everybody for coming. I'm just going to walk you through the agenda for today's discussion. It really is a cross-community work which is unfolding here. And I'm going to come to Rafik Demak very soon to give us some more information about what's happening in the communities. But I would just like to say we're going to start off with Rafik for some input about who has been contacted, and what's the feeling in the communities. I understand that there's been discussions yesterday, today, in other spaces, and it really is unfolding before our eyes. Then we're going to pass to Monica, to my left, Monica, who's going to give us a short presentation with the screenshots there about human rights and what they really mean from a corporate responsibility point of view and perhaps with regard to the UN resolution on that matter. And then we're going to go very quickly to the main part of the discussion, which is open discussion with you, because this is cross-community. So I'd like that we discuss, what does it really mean for the communities? I mean, how does it really overlay onto your work? And how do you apply it? What does it mean for you? Not the theoretical stuff, but rather really its application here in ICANN. And then that will be somewhat substantive, perhaps. We'll see. And then we will go towards the sort of next steps, the ways forward, the procedures which could trigger thereafter. And how do we go about this, continuing this conversation and structuring it and giving it more emphasis from now on to ICANN 53, and actually what would happen at ICANN 53. And that will be the chance for to go towards a wrap-up from Marilia Maciel to sort of conclude with the discussions and what you've discussed, what you thought, where it's going, and to try to solidify this conversation and make it perhaps something more. So I really welcome your comments, your engagement. This is really your session, so thank you very much. I'd like, if that's okay, to... Niels has mentioned remote participation. I really hope we have Stefania here with us too, Milan, who is going to be the moderator for that. I really hope there's moderation and we can really have an online chat too. So, Rafik, can you tell us what's happening? What's the feeling in the communities? Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Rafik Demak speaking for this transcript. So, I think first what was tried is to check with the different parts of the community to see how they see the issue, what are their concern or point of view, and I think there is a diversity regarding how the parts of the community see the responsibility of ICANN regarding human rights. But what I saw, there is an interest to start a dialogue, to initiate this discussion, and to work on that. So I think it's just a start. So we need to begin and to see what kind of issue that will be brought to the table, what are the concerns from the different groups. I think I see some of the leaders like Michele Nelon from the registrar, but also I see a board member, Wolfgang Kleinfechter. And for example, in our meeting yesterday, the non-commercial stakeholder group and board, we didn't really plan that, but the issue of the human rights was brought. And there was a discussion, and also my understanding that the GAG also discussed about human rights. So we have, the communities are starting to talk about that. I mean, it's it will be an ongoing discussion. I mean, we are in the beginning, and this is a good opportunity to get input. I'm not sure what we can end up with, but at least we are having this dialogue now. And I see several people coming, and if I compare it to the first session in LA, I think we have the proof of growing interest.
Thank you, Rafi. That's very insightful. I know that the NCUC has been speaking about this and other communities too. The GAC has also discussed it yesterday. I guess we will come to those communities a bit later on. I'd really like some more information because, you know, that we can't be in all spaces at all times, so I'd really like to hear from the community about whether you have discussed this too. It's really for you. So thank you very much, Rafik. I'm going to now pass to Monica. We'll give a short presentation, Monica, about corporate responsibility to respect human rights. ICANN. Monica, please.
Thank you so much, Lee. I'm Monica. I work for the Center of Internet and Human Rights, and I've been closely involved with Lee and Niels and the whole non-commercial constituency in trying to get this thing on the agenda. And so I don't want to take a lot of your time. It's, I guess, so much better if you just discuss and engage. So I just briefly want to say that it's nothing revolutionary what we're trying to say, because the idea that the same rights that people have offline that they have online, it's nothing revolutionary. It just disregards the medium, whatever people use to communicate and exchange the ideas, and it was recently endorsed by the Human Rights Council that exactly the same rights that people have offline, they should have online. So, and how does it relate to ICANN? I guess just as Neil said, there is this Article 4 of the ICANN Articles of Incorporation, which says that ICANN is bound to operate for the benefit of the Internet community as a whole, carrying out its activities in conformity with relevant principles of international law and applicable conventions and local law. So that this is the beginning point of the whole discussion, that ICANN itself recognizes that this is important. And I don't want to take a lot of time. I just want to say that the human rights is not something mysterious. It's just a simple moral principles or norms that describe certain standards of human behavior. And they're commonly understood as fundamental rights to which a person is entitled simply because she or he is a human being, nothing else. And these rights are often expressed and guaranteed by law, in forms of treaties, customary international law, or general principles, and other sources of international law. Now we could ask, what does ICANN have to do with that? The idea is that human rights obligations bound the government, and as well, they lay responsibilities for corporations to act in certain ways or to refrain from certain acts in order to promote, protect, and respect human rights. So, briefly, I just want to say that this whole regime of human rights, is, as we know it now, the contemporary one, originated not that long ago in the aftermath of the Second World War, and which the whole movement, as you can see in the slides, I don't want to read everything for you, it culminated with the adoption of Universal Declaration on Human Rights in Paris in 1984. And this document inspired many other treaties and documents signed by the countries around the world, among them the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which is the main human rights treaty that has been ratified by most of the countries in the world. So our approach here is to focus only on the rights initially that are recognized, that has a wide recognition around the world, and not to focus on something that is regional or national, but rather something that has a very wide recognition and application. So that's why we begin, and as you can see in the report by the Article 19, we begin only with a very classical first-generation human rights, which is the right to privacy and right to freedom of expression. And as I say, the reason why we do this is we intend to focus on something that has a global recognition. What else do we have here? So the whole idea is not to say that somehow now there's this group of people who intend to argue that ICANN's mission is need to be extended, but rather just that human rights must be respected in the existing policies and operations, not that we somehow intend to extend the whole mission of ICANN to respect and promote human rights. It's not about this. And as I said, we search for the consensus and focus on something that has a global focus. And having a distinction and drawing a distinction between the public duty of the government to protect human rights and sort of private bodies' duty to respect human rights. We make a difference here, and we perhaps think that ICANN falls under the second one. And draw attention to the UN guiding principles on business and human rights, and especially the due diligence principle, who, in short, says that ICANN perhaps should weigh the human rights impact of its policies and procedures, develop certain strategies to ensure that staff and other stakeholders understand this impact, and develop and articulate human rights policy, make sure that all employees and other stakeholders involved know and understand and implement it, and develop certain metrics to monitor ICANN's human rights performance. So I guess I leave the floor here, and I hope that this will sparkle some discussion. So I give the word back to Lee and Niels now.
Thank you very much for that short and concise presentation, Monica. And now I'd like to go over to some of the people from the different constituencies to hear and understand how they see and feel that human rights impact at work. And with that, I would first like to go to Michele.
Thanks. Michele Nevin for the record. Morning. Where does one begin? As a registrar, I find this entire thing to be excruciatingly painful. To be perfectly frank, I think ICANN has done a very, very poor job in respecting local law. By making it torturous for a registrar or a registry to comply with national law and to comply with both ICANN policy and ICANN contracts, registrars under the 2013 RAA are expected to collect quite a bit of information during a registration of a domain name. There are contractual obligations involved with the escrow of the data of registrations, which ICANN is only making available to us via a US entity. There is no way to escrow the data within the European Union, which is quite problematic. Collection of data is one thing. The display of data is another, of course. There are subtle yet very important differences between the two things when we're talking about who is. ICANN does have a wonderful, and for the transcript I'm being incredibly sarcastic, policy for requesting exemptions on who is display. The policy is so fantastic and so efficient that not one registrar has successfully managed to use it, because essentially you need to be either involved in litigation or defending yourself from your DPA or something like that to be able to trigger it, which is ridiculous. The exemption process around data retention has been, I'm trying to think of a diplomatic word, let's just say, I'll go with dysfunctional. Dysfunctional, painful, expensive, these are words I think of. I'm not sure how many registrars within the European Union have managed to get through the entire process, but I think at one stage there were about 20 of us stuck in there. Of course, ICANN does a very good job of protecting its own public perception by not providing any real transparency until such time as they've decided that the request has almost gone through. They don't tell anybody that that request exists. So it's like, oh, look, here's a request from Company X. And then they say that their request is okay. So it's like, oh, that only took 2 or 3 weeks. Whereas the reality is the request has been stuck inside ICANN's legal department for the previous 6 months or longer. So it is dysfunctional, it is messy, it is painful. For those of us on the front lines, as it were, it's a matter of serious concern. I mean, prior to this meeting, I received an email from the ICANN board to go to meet with them on Sunday morning. I mean, so did other chairs, and it wasn't just me. And so I asked our members, you know, what were matters that they wanted me to raise with them? And every single European registrar who responded to that email had one thing in common. It was all around matters of data privacy. And, you know, the thing is, you know, this is an area where I think the focus on the world is getting higher and higher. I mean, there's a huge data breach in the U.S. involving a healthcare company since we got here to Singapore. If I don't have data, then I cannot disclose it or lose it or leak it. But if you're expecting me to collect it, then you're increasing the likelihood of it escaping into the wild if something happens. Because invariably something will happen. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Michele, for that contribution. I'd like to now move ahead to Patrick Fellstrom of the ASEC and hear about the impact of human rights on his work.
Thank you very much. Let me start by saying that the statement I'm going to, or what I'm going to talk about, is not on behalf of ASEC. It is myself, and based on the work that I've been doing during the years related to CSR issues, because I think it's really, really important to separate human rights, which is something that states are bound by with sort of the agreements between them that is hosted under the United Nations. That's a very special framework for states. On the other hand, we do have various CSR interpretations that have been done by various organizations, including the UN, but there are also others that talk about interpretation of sort of best current practices, which we normally use in the term we use in the internet arena, that talk about how we as the community do think that a good behaving company should behave, because in the market economy, where market economy forces are supposed to create a good platform for innovation and competition and all of those nice words, we also have norms in the society. We cannot only say that we are allowed to do everything that is not illegal. We have to follow those norms, and in a global society, like with the internet, we of course get a lot of stress because the norms are different. Not only legislations are different, cultures are different. So of course we need some kind of interpretation. And because of this, I think personally some kind of interpretation or some kind of guidelines for ICANN is something that is a good thing to develop in, for example, a cross-constituent working group, cross-community working group that we're currently talking about. Because the ICANN environment is indeed very special. It is global. It requires very high level of harmonization of actions or non-actions all over the world, across cultures, across areas where you have different norms, where you have different legislation. And indeed, we do have members of GATT that actually are states, which are bound by the human rights. And on top of that, we have both policies that we are developing that some parties are following, for example, the non-contracted parties, the CCTLDs. And then we have, like Michele just explained, the contracted parties, which are bound by specific contracts, which can explain very, very detailed what is to be done. So it is indeed a very complicated situation. And I see many other people around this table, and yes, I am looking at you, Wolfgang, that have been working on this issue related to everything that is related to CSR and human rights-related issues on the Internet. So I don't think we need... I think we all agree that it is a complicated area, but just because of that, I think that work on this and come up with guidelines for ICANN is something... CSR guidelines for ICANN, and I really would like to use that terminology, CSR guidelines for ICANN as the corporation and guidelines for the community. Both of those might be very good to do.
Thank you very much for the very concrete contribution from you, Patrick. I'd now like to go over to Olivier from ALAC.
Yes, thank you very much. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, ALAC Vice Chair now. Thanks first for inviting me to join you, and I'm sorry I arrived a little bit late, so I missed the majority of the communications. I might be speaking completely out of context, but I'll try and focus on a couple of points. The at-large community is, in ICANN, effectively trying to, we can't represent, but we act in the best interest of the Internet end users. We're not composed as just of just civil society organizations, but we also have some universities, some commercial organizations that provide Internet services to deprived communities. The strong component part of at-large is to have a strong link with end users. And as such, end users are not, have a slightly different view sometimes about human rights, depending on where they are based in the world. We cover all of the world's countries, or majority of the world's countries. And when one is supposed to bring forward the point of view of our end users, we have to exercise some moderation with regards to what we say due to the local component part of what our end users really need. Some of our users are for very strong WHOIS records. Others are a little bit more more lenient on this and emphasize more privacy. And so the ALAC point of view as far as databases, the multiple number of databases that we see with ICANN, as we know, every GTLD, CCTLD, etc., all the domains have these WHOIS records worldwide. The point of view there has been that we want to have strong WHOIS records, but at the same time also strong privacy and proxy services, so that the freedom of speech, etc., is not something that is then cut or somehow destroyed by having WHOIS records that enable people to be put in jail and things when they basically try and have democracy in their environment. There's been a big concern in our community regarding data protection. Many of the databases are based in the United States, where data protection laws are not as strong as in other parts of the world. And so, especially for our European members, this has been a real issue, and certainly an issue with registrant data being sold or used for marketing purposes, which they were absolutely not aware of to start with. And then once the data is sold, it's very difficult to get it unsold or to take it off the ether again. And of course, since we have direct links with end users, we're the first ones to receive the complaints. We send them over to the compliance department. Most of the time, they just get a few months wasted and don't get very much feedback at the end. But that's been quite a frustrating experience on our part. The other thing is, with regards to this human rights issue, the ALAC hasn't taken a front seat in, you will have noticed, we haven't taken a front seat in the organization of this. A couple of reasons. First, we're very stretched with, as you know, with all of the other things that are happening at ICANN, but also because some of our members are based in countries that are not actually very good on human rights records, and the concern, and we've actually had some feedback from these structures, is that if they are part of an organization that takes a stance that will really put their own government in a bad light, they might actually suffer locally for this. So we've tried to keep out of any direct, if you want, very visible action as such. But there certainly is support within our community for this and for this whole program. But it's just one of these things where you have to do things in moderation. I hope I haven't confused you more than 5 minutes ago. But if you have any questions, of course, I can.
No, that was excellent, Olivier. Thank you very much. And I think we're slowly starting to see some convergence already that we need clear guidelines for the future proofing of ICANN's work and the protection of users and the balancing of rights. But there are several more people that are, I think, eager to speak and would be very interesting to have. But I would definitely also like to open up the queue for other people that would like to chip in. So I'll start the queue with Bill Drake of NCUC, and then I'll also hope that I can draft Wolfgang Kleinwachter to the queue as well.
Thank you, Niels. Good morning. I'm very sensitive to what Olivier just said about the position of members. And obviously, NCUC has, I think, two-thirds of its members outside North America, and many of them are in developing countries and countries where relationships with government can be dicey. That said, I would also think that if we calibrate this properly, and if the framing is not one of kind of aggressive, accusational, anything else, but simply sort of saying, you know, that we're talking about adding into the standards for the evaluation of policy outputs and processes recognition of internationally accepted legal norms having to do with things like privacy and expression, and that is a joint position of a larger community of which they happen to simply be part of, adopted in a sort of, you know, rough consensual sort of way, etc. I would think that there ought to be enough political cover there, and that one would hope that they could explain if asked. I mean, anybody who's doing the kinds of human rights work or other advocacy in their countries that could put them in a dicey position with governments anyway, they probably have larger issues than whether or not ICANN incorporates into its standard practices a practice of saying, well, is what we're doing here consistent with international recognized norms having to do with privacy, for example. I mean, that, you know, I would think that would be almost a sort of secondary concern. But I do recognize the point, and I think it's something to try to work with those members to say, how can we help you to enhance your comfort level and give you the kind of cover that you would need without, you know, without putting at large the position where you can't endorse something that is obviously in our collective interest.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Olivier speaking. So it's interesting because when sitting in this room, of course, we could think, well, of course, it's a given. It goes without saying, of course, we have to embrace human rights, and we all think that it's an easy thing to do. I also had the, I don't know if it was the chance or bad luck, to be sitting in the room in Dubai in 2012 at the World Conference on International Telecommunications, the WCIT. And there was one line to be added. Human rights should, the whole agreement should go under human rights. I think it was pretty much a given. Oh, no, of course not. It's actually what initially triggered the really bad blood and the whole thing that got the whole conference to collapse with so many countries not actually signing. And it was absolutely absurd to hear the points that some countries were saying, oh, well, if you're going to have human rights, you need to have country rights as well. You need to, and the right of countries, I'm not quite sure what that is, but, you know. So in some jurisdictions, this is a very, very touchy issue. And what we've tried to do is to really concentrate on the technical side of things, and try to sort of keep out of the politics, because it suddenly, in some places, human rights turn into a very political item. And that's why it's been a little bit difficult for us to fully push forward on this. Thank you.
I see there's a direct reaction there that I would like to give the opportunity to.
Just to back up what Olivier said, a member of ALAC, I think it was probably two or three meetings ago, and I won't... Holly Raish for the
pardon
transcript.
Me, for the remote participants, could you please state your name?
Holly Raish with the ALAC executive. To back up what Olivier said, I won't mention the meeting, but not that many meetings ago, one of our members spoke fairly openly about a particular policy in a government whose capital isn't that far from here, and it was a very interesting talk, and I took notes. You would say that there's no problem, except that the next time that the ICANN meeting was scheduled, she wound up with two security people knocking on her door saying, and what do you intend to say at this ICANN meeting? So it is a real threat. Please take it seriously.
Thank you very much for that. Rafiq would like to respond to it.
As someone who lived under authoritarian regime enough time of my life, I sympathize with this. But just to clarify, I don't think we are asking ICANN to be an advocate for human rights, just to be responsible and to respect what is in international laws. So there are risks to be involved in internet governance. That happened to me also when I joined it in my first IGF. So we acknowledge that. Nobody is, asking that we do an advocacy or ICANN become the champion of human rights. It's not its role. So I think we need to frame the discussion here, to back again track. And We acknowledge all this issue and to be careful. I understand that. It's also that the issue is how also ICANN is engaging with many of this authoritarian regime itself. So, it's a question hard to answer. But we are not doing advocacy here. Just that ICANN respect international laws that they are existing, and at least things can change. I'm Tunisian. And I know internet filtering risk. Tunisia was not a free country, but things change. And the funny thing Olivier mentioned about the wicked is Tunisia, which proposed a resolution about human rights and so on for the wicked. So things can change.
Tariq Mirgani. From Sudan, and everywhere when I said I'm from Sudan, everyone just get like that and concentrate. We know that there's a lot of problems in human rights in Sudan. People face a lot of things, but things I can say better now. But when we are talking about ICANN, there we have a lot of problems from ICANN is not really go with the international laws when you talk about it. They go with U.S. laws, not international laws. And that makes problem for us in Sudan. You know that we are in embargo and such in Sudan. So I have a lot of problems to even attend the ICANN. Oliver have know my story about it better. And to get support, even when we apply for the domain, the IDN for Sudan, we have to wait 1 year so the ICANN can start talking to us. Why? Because they need a license for the OFAC Paris to talk, just to talk to us. And that's a very strange issue. So it's not about just privacy, who is right of expression. It's about access from the beginning. We don't have Sudanese people is in middle between the government and the laws of sanctions from the US. This is about internet. I'm talking about internet. Sometimes they get disconnected because of the government. Sometimes they, how many times they cannot access website because it's embargoed. They cannot access this website. Do you know that we cannot access many of the free websites like Google, Google Courts, others, a lot of things we cannot do from Sudan. Even we, people from there, we cannot. I have attended till now maybe maybe about six ICANNs. This is the first time I get supported from the ICANN. And in fact, I get supported many times, but it's stopped in some time. No, we cannot do it for you because you are from Sudan. That's a problem. So, Oliver, when he talk about countries' rights, I think, yeah, we have also to think about countries' rights or about people from some countries' rights, something like that. And that's all I want to say. Thank you.
No, that's a very valuable and very useful contribution to the discussion. Thank you very much. If you don't mind, Olivier, to add more voices to the discussion, I'd like to add to Wolfgang.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter, ICANN board. I'm here, first of all, to listen. And so I think the really very welcome initiative is organized in a way here in this change. I think it's extremely useful because you have here people from various different constituencies, advisory committees, supporting organization, and it becomes clear through such a design that this issue, this human rights issue, is not just an issue pushed forward by one single group, but this is deep based in the various constituencies of ICANN. So I think this cross-constituency approach is a good example for what ICANN stands for bottom-up processes. So that means you have to start on the bottom. Somebody has to initiate this. Then you have to start from the bottom, and then, you know, let's see what the community will produce. So I think this is my first point, a very encouragement and a great satisfaction, you know, how this has started. Number two is more on substance. As Olivier has said, it's rather complex, and but the interesting point here is that we have, and the study has made this clear, we have in our legal documents, as ICANN, we have a reference to human rights, so that it's not something new which comes to ICANN. This was in the very early beginning, even if the word human rights does not appear, but in Article 4 of the Article of Cooperation, it says ICANN has to operate in the framework of international convention, and this includes international convention on trademarks, international convention on security issues, and international convention on human rights. So the missing point for many years was there was no awareness. There was a lot of awareness about trademark, but there was not so much awareness about human rights. But a group of people have raised this always, including the ALAC and the NCU, say that right of freedom of expression and privacy is involved. But I think now we have reached a new dimension, and I'm very thankful for this recommendation 2, in particular in the report from Article 19, which looks for more activities to create awareness. So, and I think this is the best thing what we can do at the moment to that people understand better what does it mean. And I'm also very thankful what Rafik has said. You know, ICANN is an organization for names and numbers, has a very limited technical function. And we would probably risk that this functioning works well also in the future if we start to politicize this function. But on the other hand, it has absolutely clear that all policies around the implementation of this function has to respect human rights. So insofar we have to have something like a watchdog or to see if a decision is made, will this be in conflict with human rights. Yesterday in the meeting with the NCUC, I said ICANN has no right to violate trademarks, but it has also no right to violate human rights. So whatever ICANN is doing, it has to be in the framework of these conventions. And I can assure you that I see nobody in the board who is against this. So I think there's full consensus, and Fadi, the CEO, had made this clear yesterday also in this consultation. And a very final point to Michele, because you had a very concrete case, and my question to you is, I see there are two elements. One is the substantial element with the privacy and the conflicts between American and European law, and the other one is the procedure and how I can stuff manage this. So that means just that I got it right. So your criticism went in both directions. That means it was a problem which is a little bit outside ICANN. It should be managed by the governments. That means they could have better advice than what they did. But the other thing is the procedural issue for the ICANN staff, and I take this message from you and will transfer it as much as I can. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang. I'd like to go to Kathy Kleiman right now, and I see that Jean-Jacques Sahel, Kathy.
Kathy Kleiman, Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. First, I apologize for being late to this very important meeting. We're coming out of the Proxy Privacy Accreditation Working Group, where what we're talking about here has great relevance to there. And following up with Wolfgang, I think there are ways we can use human rights issues in a very concrete way in the policymaking process, and ICANN. And I'd like to urge some practical application of what we're talking about. In addition to education and awareness, let's build in a human rights screen to the process. We've had a rights protection mechanism screen on certain types of issues, trademark issues. We always look at the intellectual property implications of certain types of issues. Every time we do that, we should be looking at the human rights implications as well. It should be at the level of the issues report, of the draft working group reports, of the final working group reports, and of the board review prior to the board resolution and or adoption. Particular aspects of the human rights that we've talked about and that have been talked about already, freedom of expression, fair use, the basic use of generic words by everyone, privacy, freedom of association, due process, and we've been hearing about access. So these types, to build this into our process of policy review and to have it would then have the staff including it in the initial evaluation that becomes the issues report and have that screen evaluation at every level. And that's where I think we should be going with this, not just leaving it to certain stakeholder groups to advocate, but building it into the process. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this, Kathy. And here we got more. Please come up. Please state your name and...
Hi, I'm Sidra Iqbal. I am a first-time fellow to the ICANN and also a journalist from Pakistan. I have been struggling throughout whenever this issue of human rights comes up. What we see is, if I was to broadly look at my region, and we were having this discussion in the Middle Eastern Regional Committee as well, that some of the problems, some of the collisions with internet-related scenarios in our part of the world have to do with the blasphemy law, which unfortunately or fortunately does come under the human rights domain. How is the international community responding to it? Because somehow in this part of the region, we see that the governments have come up with a system of how and what they deem is the appropriate freedom of expression. But on the internet, you can't really have those kind of editorial controls. For example, as a journalist in Pakistan, what goes on TV, what goes in print, we have some checks and balances. But we've seen bloggers and digital journalists get into a lot of trouble with governments just because there is nothing that defines it. And more or less, there's a lot of knee-jerk reaction to it as well. Like in Pakistan, for the last 2.5 years, they've blocked all access to YouTube. And I feel that there has to be a better, a closer coordination when it comes to policy making and the internet governance. Unfortunately, the IT departments, the IT ministries that the governments have, they're only focused on the revenue side of it. Like earlier this year in Pakistan, we had the 3G, 4G licenses going out, and to the government, all they cared about was how the revenue is coming in. The human rights element is missing, not just at the government level, at the ICANN level, but also as a society, we haven't really grasped it. So how do we see a way to move forward with it? Because, again, within human rights, you will have many layers and you will have many factions. So what is our core focus area? Should we go about an annual, a yearly focus area that we can then perhaps build up towards it? There has to be a roadmap, right? Thank you.
Thank you very much for that important case. I'd like to shortly frame it that there are different levels of responsibility, and countries have those, and ICANN should respect human rights and is not obliged to protect them. So it's about to respect human rights in their own policies and procedure, and that's what we're aiming to talk about, but it would be, it might be hard to have ICANN be a advocate for pushing, holding countries to account, because that might confuse roles and responsibilities.
My name is Anna. I'm also a fellow newcomer, so my question might be a bit elementary, but I'll try to make it sophisticated. Anyway, first of all, I want to say that I cannot agree more with Wolfgang and Rafik saying that ICANN shouldn't become a human rights advocacy body. I think it just have to become more responsible in respecting of human rights, because otherwise I think it's going to raise and cause more criticism towards ICANN. But besides that, my question is that if there is a human rights issue regarding, let's take new utilities, like we had a case with Amazon, or for example, my country, I come from Georgia, and I spent 2 minutes explaining that I don't come from state Georgia. So if there is an auction on .Georgia, and there is some kind of a human rights issue, for example, state Georgia has more money and is more privileged to get this domain than the country Georgia, which is much limited in budget. So there is a conflict. Who in ICANN is responsible for solving this human rights issue? Is it board? And another question about this, is ombudsman dealing only with internal conflicts, like between different bodies in ICANN, or can this kind of human rights issues be delegated to ombudsman so that he deals it with, or she deals it with this? So,
I think we're very privileged to also have the ombudsman here. So your question to him was whether this would be a thing for him to do as well. So maybe we could ask the ombudsman if he could shortly respond to that.
Michaeli, for the record, it's actually not an ombudsman issue. .Georgia, .Ireland, .Singapore, .Kuwait, they're all countries, so you can't apply for them. You can't apply for them as a new TLD. There were a couple of applicants who did apply for country names as new TLDs, and they were rejected out of hand. Now, I think the edge case would be if you were to apply for, say, I don't know, I'm thinking, if you were to apply for the country name in a third-party language, so if I was to apply for, say, I don't know, .Ireland in Chinese or something like that, then that would be more problematic. If you were to apply for .Georgian, like somebody applied for .Irish, the Irish government has no standing in that because they can't get involved in that kind of query. Now, it depends. I mean, you might have been using that just as an example. So, you know, it could be there could be something else where the Ombudsman might need to get involved. But on that specific point, unless I misunderstood it, like, you wouldn't have been able to apply for the TLD to begin with. It would have been rejected.
Thank you very much, Michele. We are coming to our last half an hour, so I'd like to shortly move to sort of more towards process and next steps, and I'd like to perhaps cue up Marilia perhaps to speak if she wants, and others. I think some of the discussions, and also to Chris as well. I'd like to also cue up people in the audience if you want to speak now. We've got people from the business community in the audience, I see. And also, you've touched upon issues regarding the GAC. The GAC has been discussing these issues recently. So if anybody from the GAC wants to talk, I know there's been a very positive discussion about this issue. So I'd like to hear from someone there, if possible. I'm looking at certain people. And also, there's also been discussion about communities and the importance of communities here and community applications for GTLD is also very important. I'm looking at someone in the audience there too. So there are many people. We have half an hour left. I would really like to have, and we also maybe have people on remote. So I don't know, Stefania, if there's anybody on remote. How many people are on remote now? Just
about 20.
20, okay.
We have over 20 people participating remotely, including Nora, the VP for, I forgot exactly what it
public
is.
Interest.
Public interest.
Thank okay,
you.
Great. Well, welcome, and thank you very much for staying online. We really need to move on. So who wants to come forward? I've prompted certain people. I hope that they can speak. We'll start with Chris, please. Thank you. But briefly, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Chris Lahead for the record, ICANN Ombudsman. Unfortunately, I've got a session where I'm presenting on reconsideration ombudsman in a few minutes, so I'll be very brief. And that is to say that my thinking of human rights within ICANN is that it should be tied into the accountability function. When you think about human rights, you have to say you're accountable for complying with well-recognized international standards, and therefore you have to slot it into whichever ICANN functions are appropriate. And one of the roles that I have as the Ombudsman is to look at what they call in my bylaw diversity issues, which I think is what they used in 2003 when they framed the bylaw to mean reflecting the portion in the articles and in the bylaw talking about respecting human rights. So I'm interested in it because within the ICANN community I do have that function of ensuring respect for human rights, and I'm very anxious for the community to think about that in the context of what I do as the Ombudsman and seeking direction. I don't think it's my function to say what I think I should do. I really want the community to think about what they want the Ombudsman to do, and I'm happy to share that and discuss it, and thank you for the opportunity and the invitation to be here, and I must go.
Thank you very much, Chris. I can see. Let's go for more diversity now. We have someone from the GAC.
Someone in the audience.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Who's in the audience? Yes, please, sir. And then we go to Horia Kantia from Switzerland, please. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Michael Mumin. I'm from the University of Cologne, and I'm also part of the Arabic Script Generation Panel for IDNs and of TFA IDN. But I'm speaking more on my own behalf here. I was reading this paper you were passing out here on freedom of expression, and I think there's a high level of freedom of expression which is not exactly recognized in this paper, and this is actually about the characters which are eligible for use TLDs, because there's a process for that. So right now there's an IDN process in which characters are being chosen on which to, sorry.
Maybe you could pick the mic.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Take it off the stand or something.
Difficult, sorry. So there are, there's a process on how to formulate IDNs. And within that process, generation panels form for different scripts to choose code points, that is characters, which are eligible for use in IDNs. Now, for that, there is a process
which was called P2.1 LGR process for the root zone, which explains how to do that. Within that process, there are certain thresholds for considerations of languages to be eligible for, well, let's say, representation or inclusion within that set. So that means there is the integration panel, which defined the MSR, the maximum starting repertoire, and there's a threshold on an international scale, which is called expendable intergenerational instructional scale, which basically ranks languages from what they have called the use in society, and it categorized them. So like 1 would be international language, and like 13 would be a deceased language. And there is a threshold which says that a language must have a status of at least 4 or 5 to be eligible for inclusion. Now, the problem is that such statistics on languages really are based on historical processes and certain considerations. So, as I was trying to explain in a presentation I was giving at the last ICANN meeting in Los Angeles, languages are evaluated by people and assigned states and are regulated by governments in forms of language policies. So all of these are reflected in these statistics, and these statistics do not necessarily reflect linguistic reality. And we, for example, as a working group, have already run into conflict with these rules where we wanted to include code points based on what we consider current and proper use of languages in writing. But because these languages did not fulfill the necessary criteria on that scale, those code points were not eligible for integration into the Arabic LGR. And I think there's a problem in the process because the rules of that process have basically been set before community-based groups and generation panels were able to conduct their analysis of certain sets of characters. So it is a problem, I believe, of freedom of expression, but at a higher level because it affects which characters actually can be used to write domain labels. And I think this is something which really wasn't considered that much. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I like this discussion more and more. It's getting very layered. It's about access. It's about linguistic diversity. I really appreciate the diversity of the discussion. It's really pleasant to hear, not just about freedom of expression or privacy issues. I would like to, if I may, Mikhail, after just first of all, Jorge Kente from Switzerland, who is also a member of the GAC, and then we'll pass to Mikhail, please. Thank you.
Hello, and thank you for pointing before at me morally. I'm Jorge Cancio. I'm working for the Swiss delegation.
Could you please be closer to the mic? Thank you.
Swiss delegation at the GAC. And I'll talk, of course, only in my personal capacity because, as you know, the GAC, and I'll have to run out there, we will have to write our communique and negotiate it and see how we find a common wording on what we discussed or what are the conclusions on human rights. But my personal perception is that we had a very good discussion, that there was a lot of common ground, and many of the things that have been said here, like taking a more systematic approach or embedding the evaluation of ICANN policies, also the human rights and international law perspective. All this was shared in the discussions in the GAC. And more or less the common ground was to participate in this process of the community and also to launch some sort of process within the GAC. So I think this shows that there's shared views among many different stakeholders. And as to the evaluation, and this is what a couple of delegations said in the in this open meeting of the GAC, and which was also put forward by our Swiss delegation, that, for instance, a very interesting policy development, which has been the first round of the new GTLD expansion, would benefit probably from a part of evaluation or a set of evaluation which focused also on human rights specifically. And that's more or less what I can share with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jorge. Mikhail, please. And then I'd really like to then move from substantive issues perhaps to a way forward. Oh, we have Patrick and maybe someone from the community over there I see as well. So, Mikhail, please.
Thank you. Mikhail Medrish, Internet Support Foundation, Russia, member of at large. What I'm thinking about protection of human rights, mechanisms, procedures. Laws, yes, but it's high level. Procedures, what is conflict? What is a breach of human rights? Something happened and no procedure. Some different interests and no procedure to solve this problem. One example, you know, from the 1st of February, all business is under the United States legislation where to finish their business activities at the territory of Crimea. It's okay, it's a decision of the United States government. But one small detail. Two registries, at least two, GoDaddy and 101 domains, finished with the services of their customers of the territory of Crimea. It's 2,000 domains. They erased the information from database. Not all of them. A part of them moved from GoDaddy and 101. So, and no procedure I can to help end user to protect their domains in such case. It's very simple. It's not force majeure. It's a problem. And if we think proactively, we must try to understand what can be happened and to have a procedure. So I think maybe not right, but in any case, if something happened, that's only an example. It can be something different, different country, different government, different solutions. But in any case, we are to think proactively. We are to think about possible problems, possible conflicts, and to have some procedures, not to think at the time, to have it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael. Very pertinent comment. And Patrick Feldstrom, please.
Yes, I think, and thank you very much, Patrick Feldstrom. And this time I speak on behalf as chair of ESSEC. I think we heard a lot of examples of things that might be or might not be something that fall under what could be viewed as CSR issues related to ICANN or otherwise under Article 4 of the Articles of Association of ICANN. But if we are here to really create a cross-constituency working group work on these issues, there are a couple of very formal steps we have to go through. And to be honest, I don't really know how we are going to finish that at this time, given that the time of the meeting, we're on our way running out. So I encourage people to please talk about what we are going to talk about instead of continuing to give examples of issues that we already know about. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Patrick. It's time for that movement. So next steps, ways forward, it's quite clear. I think there's quite a lot of movement towards how to move forward to ICANN 53, Stephanie Perrin, but I also have Jean-Jacques Sayle. So, ladies first.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Following up on what Patrick just said, I think there has been a suggestion that a cross-community working group ought to be set up if there's sufficient interest. It sounds like there might be sufficient interest. Now, the question is, what would that cross-community working group do? And I would suggest that because of the nature of this discussion and the requirement that ICANN, in my view at least, my personal view, stick to its knitting and figure out where its remit is, what we really need to do is focus on instruments that would help us assess the human rights implications of what we're doing. I think Kathy Kleiman has already mentioned this. And I've said this before, and I'll probably say it many times again. Many democracies have a regulatory impact assessment instrument that they use, or a variant thereof. Certainly in Canada, that regulatory impact assessment includes an assessment of the human rights, mostly the stuff that we've already ensconced in domestic law, but other aspects of human rights as well. That's a kind of a tool, an instrument, that a cross-community working group, in my view, could develop. That's kind of a low-hanging fruit item, and this is a big issue. Let's go for something achievable in that cross-community working group that would help us understand this issue better. Secondly, the whole issue of education and awareness of human rights has been brought up. I think that that is something that a cross-community working group could at least measure and address. I don't know what the metrics are for that, but I would be willing to bet it's something that there might be some interest in the ICANN Academy to address in their basic training piece, because you can't really have a good discussion if you're not all on the same level in terms of awareness. So I think that's another thing that a community working group might want to look at. And my third point, and again it's a personal view, we often see this tension between law enforcement and human rights as if the two things were opposed to one another. Firstly, as a privacy person, enforcement of data protection law is law enforcement, as far as I'm concerned. And secondly, folks who argue for privacy are not against criminal law enforcement. Far from it, you know, especially with identity theft and scamming the way it is. The question is how ICANN does this in the context of the rule of law, which is a human right, right? So I think that's an important issue that also could be examined in the context of a cross-community working group. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephanie. And pragmatic response. Now, Jean-Jacques Sayle from the ICANN staff, apologies, I didn't see you before, but some insight onto the way forward, perhaps some pragmatic responses, please. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Lee. And actually, I wanted to start with thanks, if you allow me, to the Council of Europe, actually, in the first place, because you know, you've been very instrumental in all this this discussion, and I think it's thanks to you that the author of the report is actually in with us in the ICANN meeting, so thanks for helping her get here. And also, I think it's as useful background for everyone, the Council of Europe produced in the past some really excellent guidelines that it actually developed in partnership with other stakeholders in terms of the applicability or implementation of existing laws, or in this case the European Convention on Human Rights, for instance, when it comes to internet service providers, application developers, games developers. And these are extremely valuable tools because, as I think has been mentioned before, one of the key issues is not that we don't have legislation, it's that one needs to understand how best it applies in reality, frankly. So I think that's been really good background and experience at the Council of Europe in how to do this. So thanks again for your work on that. I'm not going to comment on the report because it's very tempting to go into a critique and we could all be here for hours. It would be really fun, but we don't have time. So I think there's been some really concrete ideas in terms of proceeding. You know, so what we'll need to do, we can come back to you all if you want with, you know, I mean, some of you know exactly the process already, but we can outline it for you, but the next step would be to basically work on a charter, to draft a charter, you know, effectively terms of reference for such a working group, and then, you know, for the interested parties to participate in drafting that charter. So that would be the sort of next step. But I'd be more than happy to liaise with those of you who are interested to give you the exact process. We can do that very quickly. I think just thinking more broadly about these issues, you know, I feel quite privileged actually to be to work for ICANN certainly, and to be part of this community, because we're one of the very, very few setups internationally where we can actually have those sorts of discussions and we can benefit from having a community like this. And, well, we have people that can not just bring up the issues, but actually work on the policy and impact it. Part of that, in terms of the wider considerations, is that I think, frankly, we need to have more involvement by civil society in particular. And I think we need to reach out to civil society. For instance, one of the things that we've already discussed informally is could we work with the Council of Europe in reaching out to their network of NGOs and try to sensitize them to some of the issues and also about some of the participation that they can have. You know, frankly, you know, here at ICANN we've got a multi-stakeholder model, and you don't have to just produce reports. You can actually be here around the table commenting on policy, initiating policy, inputting, raising relevant points, and making sure that policies are balanced. It is quite unique. We should be proud of that, and we should actually make it work. So if you can all help us in trying to reach out to the broader CS committee to, you know, frankly, increase the numbers, that would be great. So that's a sort of, you know, aside from the substantive work, a really useful work for the long term will be to bring in more actors into the discussion. Final point, just very much just in relation to the data retention waiver, Michele knows that we've had a very quick chat about this before, not even in the context of human rights as such, and you're being heard, and it will be taken forward, I promise you. We will sort that out somehow. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but it needs to be streamlined, so thanks for that.
Thank you very much, Jean-Jacques, very clear. We are coming towards the last 15 minutes. So next steps, pragmatic steps forward, some of you mentioned them. I'm looking a little bit at Marilia. I don't know whether you have things to say. You will make some concluding remarks. Olivia, maybe we go to Olivia, and then anybody else. Michele, please, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Olivier Crépin of Lens speaking. So one of the obvious next steps would be to create some formal cross-community working group or some structure for the whole community to be able to take part and to register into, etc. One of the concerns that we've had, and I'm just sharing, I'm not going to try and influence in one way or other, but one of the concerns that we've had, and I think Rafiq, Damek, and I will agree on this one, is that the creation of a cross-community working group is a pretty heavy-handed affair. It starts as an easy thing. Oh, yeah, let's just do a quick charter. But there's no such thing as a quick charter. The charter becomes a heavy charter and a long charter and a slow charter, and then you send it to the SONAC chairs, and as you know, they're busy with a few other topics, and it takes a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months, 3 months, and you end up spending 6 months to finally get a charter that everybody agrees to. It's a heavy thing. At the moment, there are already two major cross-community working groups at ICANN. The same question happened yesterday in the ICANN Academy working group. That's an ad hoc, at-large-led thing that was then expanded with the other parts of ICANN, but it's still seen as an at-large ad hoc working group as far as paper is concerned. So we were thinking, well, should we make this a cross-community working group? And Alan Greenberg, the ALAC chair, who's now been in ICANN for I don't know how many years, but knows all the ins and outs, said, oh, do you think the other SONAC chairs are going to even look at this for the time being? So I would just say I'd caution on thinking, well, let's try and do a cross-community working group, and in the short term you might wish to have something pretty much as loose as this, perhaps formalize it in another way, and I don't know what other way there is at the moment.
I'd like to shortly respond to that, and I think your point is very true. One of the main topics of 2015, main words seemed overload and burned out. But on the other hand, we've seen that there is a large appetite to discuss this. So I would definitely not try to negate that. At the same time, in Buenos Aires, some working cross-community working group are also, things are coming to an end and are supposed to finish up. So maybe we supposed to. So
really?
So without starting it full-fledged, I think it's important to get the discussion going now that there is momentum, because if we put it on the shelf, it will gather dust and it will become... So I think maybe we could start with a light-touch drafting.
Not put it on the shelf, but maybe have a work party as a start and formalize it as a work party. And if you want to grow it to a cross-community working group, then yes, do wait for the end of the work of some cross-community working groups. But I would love to see one of these end its work.
So, first of all, Michaela, because you were first, then Patrick, please. And then I think we need to go... Matthew... Michele, Matthew, Patrick.
Okay. Michele, for the record, and agreeing vehemently with Monsieur Olivier. There's two aspects to this. One, nobody's suggesting for an instant putting anything on a shelf or any other metaphor. What Olivier and others are deeply concerned about is ending up creating yet another, insert acronym here, you know, be it a cross community, whatever, or a working group, or whatever. If you want to call it in other communities, you have like the BOF concept, you have working parties. I mean, the idea of even just a simple mailing list where people can throw ideas around is fine. But once you start trying to wedge it into the formal structures of the ICANN circus, you're creating more workload, even if some of these things you said are coming to an end by the Buenos Aires meeting. If you have a look at the WHOIS activities alone, never mind anything else, there's something like 12 of them ongoing and 20 of them coming or something. So, you know, it's not like any that the workload is going to be reduced and we're already pretty close to breaking point. There's like several of us who would love to continue to engage with you on this and to move things forward, but personally I think you guys are more expert in this area. You do this kind of stuff on a more kind of full-time basis than a lot of us sitting around this table do. It's not that we're not interested, we just don't have the bandwidth to engage with you on this actively, but I'd love to hear more about this in Buenos Aires if there's something that... And I can assure you, speaking both for myself and for the registrars, a lot of the registrars are very interested in this because it is impacting us and is causing headaches, and we do want to move things forward. But just be wary about how you frame it in terms of creating more workload, because there's a finite number of people who are doing a lot of the heavy lifting. Thanks.
Thank you, Michele. Matthew, apologies.
Matthew Shears, Center for Democracy and Technology, NCUC, organizational member, NCSG. I would like to talk about the framing, but I'd like to bounce it up a level. We have a framing for the discussion to go forward. It's in the strategic plan. It's in ICANN's strategic plan. It's point five, priority five, which is about the global public interest. That's a significant time frame for that strategic plan. It would be marvelous to have a working party or working group that fed into that process. And it seems to me that the public interest and corporate social responsibility are two key areas that need to be fed into that process. And, of course, that process should be guided by stakeholder engagement and stakeholder input. So that's my first point. My second point is when it comes to actually assessing how ICANN is doing, there are a set of principles that, of course, that it should be measured by, one of which are the CSR principles. There are many different variations of that can be looked to. There are the RUGI business principles that have been referenced in the presentation. There are the GNI principles, and in fact, ICANN might even consider becoming a member of GNI. I mean, there are a whole range of issues that should be considered, and this all feeds very nicely into ICANN's strategic plan. I think that's a perfect kind of framing for the work of this group going forward. And I'd just like to end by saying thanks to the Council of Europe and Article 19 and all those who worked very hard to make this happen, because this is a significant step forward. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Matthew. Patrick, Rafik, Stephanie, and then we're going to have to wrap up with Melia. Thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry I have to leave the room after this statement. From an ASAC perspective, what is really important when talking about the charter for this thing, whatever it is that it needs to be absolutely crystal clear that I hope that this group will not go even close to develop any kind of policy or otherwise rules that we actually are developing and discussing in other forums. So it must be absolutely clear that it is a non-overlapping process for anything else we have, okay? It is perfectly okay to bring up various examples, otherwise people don't really know what we're talking about. But it's really important that those problems, that because the reason why people have examples is because they do believe that there are certain errors in the existing policies and processes within ICANN. We do have ways of resolving those kind of issues, and those are the mechanisms that we should use to resolve those issues. What this group should do is to work on guidelines for how these processes that we use all around ICANN is working, okay? And I hope everyone agree, and that those are the kinds of really strong statements as the NASAC chair I need to see in any kind of document that describe what this group is doing, a clear separation of what this group is dealing with and not. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for being so clear and articulate. Rafik, very quickly, then Stephanie, then Marilia, wrap up.
Don't worry, Lee, I am always quickly quick. So, I acknowledge what Olivier proposed. I think we can start with the working party and to keep the community informed. I think we acknowledge about the timeline. We have heavy trucks going, so we can start with the core. I mean, some people to work on the issue, to try to frame the issue, to ask the question, and it, we will start that discussion and to keep the, all parts of the community informed. We can agree on the way how to keep them involved, and so we see how it become in next 6 months and so on. So we can work on that and define the way and to keep the different community updated, whatever, during ICANN meetings or before, or intersessional and so on. So we can work on that.
Thank you very much. Stephanie?
Thanks very much. Responding in part to what Patrick said and to what Olivia has said, yes, indeed, it's very hard to get a new cross-community working group going, and it's not a light mechanism. I'm a little concerned that an ad hoc group is not going to have any agency. And I would just like to bring up another issue associated with the strategic plan that is important, and that is the risk that we run the longer we don't not just accept human rights, but understand it as a frame, because we continue to do work in violation of human rights. I would argue that the who is exercise that we saw that massive slide for the other day at the All Things Who Is, that entire process has to be informed by human rights, and therefore we have to get some kind of a frame rather quickly so that we don't find ourselves 2 years down the road with an ad hoc group, I can't say this obviously, an ad hoc group of the willing working away on it, but it's not actually feeding into the risk that we're running on these other processes. So I totally hear you, and of course there is the issue of burnout that we have heard much about. How do we make sure that that ad hoc group has agency? Effectiveness.
Okay, thank you very much. We really are running out of time. Very, very brief, but like 30 seconds, Olivier, please, and then Jean-Jacques.
Yeah, thank you, Lee. Olivier speaking. So I can answer that. So the ICANN Academy was actually an at-large ad hoc working group, and it's because it was going to be so difficult to transform it into a CCWG that it remained like this, and it managed to finally stage the leadership training program, which took place last year and the year before. Now it's thinking of changing the way to go. But that was an ad hoc working group under the auspices of the ALAC. I wonder whether this could be an ad hoc working group under the auspices of NCSG, perhaps, and with the other communities rallying around it. I understand your concern about not having an official home.
Okay. Thank you, Olivia.
Just let me do a follow-up on that. I think I didn't do my usual doom and gloom overstatement of risk. ICANN's at risk on this, and I think that's a strategic corporate risk, and I love the ad hoc group that ALAC has started and pushed on the Academy, but it's not the same level of risk you know?
I would like to cut this discussion short here because of matters of time, not because it's not interesting. So maybe we could go to Jean-Jacques.
10 seconds, Jean-Jacques.
Just briefly to say we very much support the dialogue and want to work with you on this. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Sorry Neil. Marilia, it's very difficult to conclude with some remarks which are pragmatic, which are give us a way forward. I really hope you can achieve that. We have just a few minutes, but I hope we can go a few minutes. Sorry? 2 minutes? Okay.
Okay. So this is Marilia speaking. Just some concluding remarks to attempt to summarize what we have discussed here. In terms of substance, I think that what I retain is that human rights in ICANN is not necessarily a novelty, but there is a commitment with international instruments, which is part of the documents that are at the very core, at the foundation of ICANN. There are also standards for corporate responsibility to protect human rights, some mentioned here that we need to observe. This is more a moment of bringing issues to the surface and raising awareness. When developing policies, I think that different actors have identified with examples the need to reconcile with different legal standards, and the need to reconcile and respect local laws, and at the same time the obligations with the contractual obligations they have with ICANN. Actors are pulled in different directions, and they identify the need to have some guidance to deal with the situation. We recognize as well that there are different responsibilities from communities here in ICANN. GATT, for instance, is bound by the international treaties that they need to observe. Communities here may have the responsibility to develop these guidelines. ICANN, as an organization, needs to respect human rights in its procedures, so there are different sectors that we need to bear in mind. Moving ahead, what I retain is that the discussion is consolidated in different constituencies. I think that there is a clear signal of that. A common consensus has been identified. We identified enough support for a cross-community effort. Not entirely clear what it is. It seems to me that there is more support for a cross-community working group. Discussion is needed. Some of the goals that have been identified for this cross-community effort is, one, to map and collect information. I think it's very useful, the cases that have been brought up to the table here, for us to understand what we are talking about. Secondly, to provide some guidelines for the process on how to solve these common concerns and issues that are evolving. It's the point that Patrick made before he left. Some instruments that may help us identify human rights implications on the policy development. And what I retain from Mikael is that sometimes it's hard to deal with the problems after the policy is approved, so maybe we need to have a moment to look at the policy. And the next steps, maybe the chairs of the ASOs and ACs could discuss a little bit more on the exact instrument and move forward with addressing a charter to this effort that we are going to implement. And Jean-Jacques has offered to facilitate this dialogue in terms of practical procedures with ICANN. We have the mailing list that we invite you to participate. You left your emails, and please join the mailing list because the discussion is ongoing there if you're interested. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marilia, to summarize this discussion so well. I'd like to ask you before I thank you for your attendance to really leave your email address. So I will send you the link to sign up for the mailing list. It's opt-in. Don't worry. I won't subscribe if you don't want that. You can do that yourself. And on that note, I'd like to thank you very much for your attention and the great discussion we've had. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your attendance. You may disconnect at this time.